Hello, my name is Tomasz Fuchs, and welcome to this week's edition of MTC Studios. Today's topic is protecting your on-premises investments with a cloud. And here's our agenda. But before we get to that, I want to make a couple of logistical comments. If you need to see your video better, you can resize it in your viewer. We also have a Q&A manager where you can enter your questions, and we'll be watching that as we present. So please enter your questions in there. And to really frame this topic, we're going to first talk about business continuity, what it is and what it means. Next, we'll talk about the different Azure Site Recovery scenarios that are supported today, followed by an actual demonstration of this technology in action. Then we'll also dive a little bit deeper into Azure Site Recovery architecture, because I think there's some very interesting things to be carried away out of that, and answer any questions, and then we'll go into closing with some remarks and some resources that I will be sharing with you guys. To set the stage for this, we have Asif. Asif, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Tom. Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon or good evening, depending on where you're calling from. Thank you for joining us. My name is Asif Khan, and I'm a global black belt with Microsoft, and my focus is modern data center, or as some of my peers like to call it, data center modernization. What I do is I help customers to modernize their data center and incorporate cloud into their data center strategies. What we're going to be talking about for the next few minutes is redefining business continuity. Now, if you notice that my title is business continuity and not disaster recovery and business continuity, a lot of times we tend to use those terms interchangeably, disaster recovery and business continuity, and I just want to emphasize the fact that there is a difference, and we want to talk about what that difference is. So what is that difference? Well, when we talk about disaster recovery, I think in terms of disaster recovery being the process of restoring a site from an outage. And when we talk about outage, it could be a natural disaster like earthquake, fire, or flood. It could be a man-made disaster like a network outage or a power outage or just human error. And when we talk about restoring a site, what we're referring to is not just recovering our data, but recovering our applications, recovering our foundational services such as network and firewall policies and security policies and backup policies and authentication, authorization, and things like that. So it's all inclusive, not just data. When we talk about business continuity, on the other hand, what we're referring to is avoiding business disruption. So that business disruption could be a disaster that DR covers, but it's a lot more than that. The business disruption could be just a change in your environment, a change in your business, such as a merger or an acquisition. It could be a trend in your industry, like rapid growth or a retrenchment in your industry. Or it could be technological change, some change that's come along that threatens your industry, and you need to take some kind of action to make sure you don't fall behind or so that you can leap ahead. So having said that, when we think about business continuity and disaster recovery in the traditional ways, we tend to lump them together as one thing. And the way we approach that strategy and how we deploy a strategy like that is the planning of it is really broken down into two simple steps. Simple in theory, much more difficult in practice. So the first step is to define a business impact analysis or to undergo a business impact analysis. And the output of that business impact analysis is that we figure out what is our downtime cost. We take all our applications, all our data, and we break it down into application groups, and we determine how much does it cost for that downtime. And that's really, really important because that helps us determine what is our downtime cost per hour. It helps determine what the budget is that we have for a project like this. And it helps us do something else, which is it makes us realize that there are a lot of applications or a lot of bodies of data out there that may not have a very high cost of downtime, in which case we need to determine, is that data something that we need to keep in our business? Is it something we can get rid of? And that usually comes down to a discussion around governance, risk, and compliance. Okay, so once we've done that initial assessment, then the second part, and this is really the hard part, is going in and determining what is tier one, what is tier two, what is tier three? And typically what happens at this point, So typically what happens at this point is that we determine what is tier one, and when we see what is tier one, that is our mission critical applications, that is our run the business type of applications. And once we have determined what our downtime cost is, that helps us determine what our recovery time objectives and recovery point objectives are. And that's how we determine what the budget is for the tier one apps. Unfortunately, what happens is that once we've defined a strategy for our tier one apps, everything else kind of gets left on the shelf for a later phase. And a lot of times because of the complexity and the expense of putting together a BCDR, a traditional BCDR strategy, we sometimes don't get to the sub tier one workloads. So what we're going to be talking about today is a Microsoft service, a cloud-based service that allows you to democratize business continuity and disaster recovery, because it spreads out the cost. It's simple enough to implement that you don't have to go through a lot of planning. You can just define workloads and just get it going. And it's very, very cost effective. And we'll get into that in a lot more detail. But before I do that, I want to take a side and talk about a philosophical question. And I want to ask our audience here, because I assume that most of you are business decision makers and business influencers, and you're meeting with vendors all the time, and you are making decisions on what to purchase and what not to purchase. When I'm meeting with my customers and they decide that they want to do business with us, or maybe they decide they want to do business with a competitor, I always like to ask the question, why did you decide to do business with me or someone else? What was it that, what was the value you saw in the solution that was proposed to you that you chose? And the answer I get usually falls into one of three buckets. And the most common one is that it reduces my cost. But a better one is that it mitigates my risk. And my favorite of all time is if a customer tells me I'm buying from you because your product or your service or your solution allows me to enable new services that I can't provide today to my customers or to my end users. So I know that when I'm talking to my customers, if I can solve any one of these problems for them, reduce their costs, mitigate their risk, or enable new services, then I know that I'm providing value to them and they're probably going to want to do business with me. So with Azure Site Recovery, we're going to show you today how implementing a solution like that will not only reduce your costs, but it'll also help mitigate your risk and help you enable new services. So what I want to do is talk to you about a customer of mine. This is a customer that's in the oil, gas, and mining industry. And if you've been following the news, you know that this is an industry, or these are industries that are going through some very tough times right now. And this customer of mine is no exception. They're going through some tremendous cost pressures. They approached us and said that we need to figure out ways of significantly and dramatically reducing our operating expense. So we looked at a lot of issues. We looked at their environment. We looked at some of the changes that we can make. And the conclusion that the customer came to is that the best option for them is to take their entire data center infrastructure and move it to the cloud. And so they asked us to help them with that. Now, here's the thing. They have about 1,500 servers, and it's a combination of Windows servers and Linux servers and some mainframe and other proprietary platforms, Unix platforms. And it's also a combination of physical servers, VMware servers, Hyper-V servers. So it's a very diverse environment. And so they asked us to help them, and they said that we need to move to the cloud. We don't know if it's going to take 1 year or 10 years. However, we do know that we have some capital expenses coming up, in that about 40% of their capital infrastructure was going end of service life within the next 3 years. So they would have to do something. They may not be able to move 100% to the cloud within that time, but they at least don't want to have to buy new equipment that they know is only temporary. So the idea is, let's look at, as their equipment goes end of life, let's start migrating those to the cloud. And what we decided on, the strategy we decided on, was to look at their data and break it up into different areas and decide how we're going to migrate to the cloud. And the first step we took is that they have a lot of geological data, and the geological data is long-term retention. We're not talking months, we're not talking years, we're talking decades. They need to keep this data for a long time. It needs to be made available to the government or to the public if they request it. The customer also looked at their tape backups that they were keeping off-site, and it was costing them a lot of money. So then we looked at how can we take their tape backups and move that to the cloud. And then the customer told us that, well, as we're planning this migration, as we said, we don't know if it's going to take 1 year or 10 years, but we want to be able to have, we want to be able to close down our DR site, our secondary data center, and move our DR capabilities to the cloud. And then finally, once we've tested everything, once we know that everything works, and once we're comfortable that our data center can run in the cloud, we want to be able to flip a switch and be able to run in the cloud from that day forward. I have another customer, very different from the previous one, much smaller. Their entire environment is about 200 servers. It is almost 100% running on VMware. It's all VMs. And they're an online retailer. This is a customer that sells flowers, candy, and other gifts online. And the interesting thing about them is they're growing very quickly, but 70% of their sales happen during 3 months out of the year. The 3 months are the month before Christmas, the month before Valentine's Day, and the month before Mother's Day. They do 70% of their business during that time. And they've told us very clearly that our website, our data infrastructure is our crown jewels. We don't intend to hand that over to Microsoft, no offense, but we want to keep that in-house. We want to keep that on-site, and we understood perfectly. But we looked at other ways that we can use the cloud to help them improve their operations. Because their environment is very bursty, as I mentioned, what we decided on is that we were going to use the cloud as their dev and test environment, so they can keep their production site running on site, but they have a replica, a near real-time replica of their site running in the cloud. And as it's running in the cloud, they can run tests off of it, they can apply patches, they can do development on it, and they can test it all to make sure that it works before they flip the switch and make it a production site. And as I mentioned before, it's a very bursty environment, so they want to do a lot of bursting. So when they exceed the capacity of their internal infrastructure, they want to be able to burst to the cloud and operate that way during those 3 months of their busy season. And finally, they want to be able to do real-time analytics that tend to be very CPU intensive, and they don't want to touch their production site. So if they can have a near real-time copy of their site sitting on the cloud, and they can do real-time analytics on that, they see a lot of value in doing that. And so what I've described to you here is not just disaster recovery, and I want to emphasize that we want to make sure that we emphasize that there is a difference between disaster recovery and business continuity, and what our solution provides is a business continuity solution. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Tom, and he's going to introduce to you the concept of Azure Site Recovery and some of the specifics of the solution. Tom, back to you.
Thank you, Asif, for that great setup. So, really, why is Azure such a big topic when we talk about disaster recovery? Well, if you look at this slide and if you listen to the information that Asif just shared with us, you know that the costs for data centers are pretty big ones, right? And here you can see that an average cost of a average size data center, $21 million. And sometimes you make these investments, but if you don't have to, then perhaps there's a better option, right? And in discussing the difference between DR and business continuity, I think that's a very good nuance because, not everything needs to be DR'd in an environment, right? He talked about tier one, the mission critical things. So you do have to kind of think about it to make sure that you take advantage of that. But then there's other foundational technology that's really required to take advantage of this. So here we have a couple of different diagrams that show the different types of solutions that we offer. The first one shows you that we can basically DR any Windows servers with the help of System Center. System Center, VMM, and orchestration can help you make that transition quite nicely. We also heard from our smaller customers that don't run System Center that they wanted something basic that's going to allow them to do it. And here's where our Hyper-V replica comes into play. And the fact that it's running, from on-prem to the cloud is really where these customers save. And of course, something that is near and dear to a lot of our customers, as a lot of you are still transitioning or perhaps, still staying on VMware, and we needed to make sure that we have a solution that can help us address this, right? And so we do now have a bare metal as well as VMware solution that we'll talk about in a little bit. While the previous slide showed you the different solutions we have available between your on-premises and our Azure, and I think that is where vast majority of the value will lie in ability to avoid those costs of the data center and maintaining that infrastructure and all that. But you also need to know that we do have ability to basically do the same thing between your data centers, right? So just as we had with the first scenario where System Center, VMM, Hyper-V replica, or SAN replication can provide you with that solution for your Hyper-V. In this case, Microsoft Azure Site Recovery is really just the orchestration brain in the cloud, if you will. And of course, VMware solution, which all came in out of the acquisition of InMaj, and that's really how we light up the VMware scenarios. You can take your existing on-premises VMs and replicate them to another data center. But as I mentioned, you know, it's far more popular to really see that data going into the cloud because that's where the big bang lies. The other part that is interesting to note is that while you are thinking about disaster recovery and perhaps business continuity, these tools actually enable something far more powerful. So in a scenario where you will fail over into Azure, you're now running this workload production in Azure, right? And as with any disaster recovery strategy, you know, I always told my customers after spending, you know, 16 years in consulting services, your DR strategy is only as good as the last time you executed and knew how well it worked. So I do encourage you to very much test it. And as part of this testing, you may find that you can actually move some of the applications that you're running on-premises on your Hyper-V or your VMware servers or on bare metal or in competitors' clouds, quite frankly, and move that information directly into Azure. That gives you, you know, a great way for you to test what it would look like, does it perform? And of course, you know, for us, it's very important that we make the whole experience very seamless. And to that end, I think we've really cleaned up the whole experience around how this product works, the solution works. And to give you an overview of what that actually looks like, I'm going to bring in Pamela to demonstrate Azure Site Recovery. Pamela, the floor is yours.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. Thanks, Tom and Asif, for letting us through this Azure Site Recovery session. So I will be demonstrating a scenario, one of the scenarios which is supported with ASR, Hyper-V to Azure. So I have a setup ready, and in that setup, I will be showing you how basically what are the steps involved in setting up ASR between a Hyper-V environment and Azure. This is fairly simple setting that you need to do. So let's walk around that, how it's done. So first of all, if you see my screen, I have an Azure portal running there. And this is where I have to create a vault first of all. So for setting up a Hyper-V or any scenario to ASR using ASR in Azure, first thing we need to do is to set up a vault. Okay. And for setting up a vault, here in the left-hand side, we have services known as recovery services, which includes our backup and site recovery. As the recovery services, you can see my vaults already created. So what is basically a vault? A vault is just a placeholder where we can keep our replicated data. So it's basically a location where we can have the data which is getting replicated, copied there. So first thing is creating a vault, and how to do it is going to recovery services, choose site recovery vault and quick create. You need to give a name to a vault, okay? And once the name is given and the region is selected, okay? So here we need to provide a name, okay? It can be any name and then the region and create vault, okay? Once that vault is created, it will be seen on the portal like this. So I already have a vault created here. So I will be using ASR Test Vault or Hyper-V Azure Vault for demonstrating this. So once this is created, okay, we can go into this Hyper-V Azure, okay, and I can see few things listed down here, dashboard, protected items, recovery plans. So we can set up all the things from here. One more thing which we can see is we have all the scenarios listed in this drop-down, which includes VMM to Azure, Hyper-V to Azure, VMware to Azure, and between on-premise sites as well. Okay. So as my scenario includes Hyper-V to Azure replication, so when we click on this, we'll get the steps which are required to set up the replication for Hyper-V and Azure. So first of all is to create a site, then prepare the servers, Hyper-V servers, and resources. So the resources include creating a storage account and virtual network. And the last one is to protect the virtual machines. So doing these steps, we can have a VM running in Hyper-V protected in Azure. Okay, so quickly showing you how to do that. First of all, we need to create a site. Okay, for creating a site, we need to go into servers, Hyper-V sites, here. So we can create a site here, add, provide a site name. Once the site is created, it will be seen like this. After creating a site, you will not be seeing any server here. It will be just a site. And then moving back to the second step, which is downloading the agent on the server and a key. So agent is basically used for communicating your Hyper-V hosts with the vault that is created in the Azure. So this agent is required for that, and this key is a key which needs to be used for authenticating your server against that vault. So once these are downloaded, so I already had these things downloaded here. So this is my site recovery provider. This is the physical server which I am running, and this is the agent site recovery provider, and this is the key. Okay, so these things are already there. I have already run my agent, so this is how we can run this agent, register the server. Okay, and once, so just to quickly show you, once you run this agent here on the server, it will give you this option, okay, to install it at some place. Okay, once this installation configuration is done, you need to put a key here to register the server with the vault. Okay, after registering the server will be seen registered with the vault, which is in the site. So this server is registered with my vault. Okay, and now I can assign a storage to this server where the VMs will be replicating. Okay, once the server is registered, we have downloaded the agent, registered the server, we will have to create a storage. One thing we need to understand here, and one thing we have to make sure here, is that we have to create a storage account and a virtual network in the same location as that of a vault. So if my vault, site recovery vault, is created in East US, I need to have a storage account in the East US. Okay? Once I create a storage account like this, okay, I do have an option of selecting the redundancy at the storage level. So the types of redundancy we offer are local redundant, geographically redundant. So we can select among these. Okay, we can select the location of the storage account. Okay, and then I can select the redundancy. In case of LRS, we have a same location where all the copies of data will be present. In case of GRS, geo-redundant, we have three copies locally stored in one data center and the rest three copies in the secondary data center. So in case of a failure of a first data center due to some kind of outage, we have secondary data center recovering that particular data. Okay, so once we have created a storage account and a network, so network same, we can create our own network with our own address space, location and a name. Okay, after creating storage account network, we need to create a protection group. So what is a protection group? So protection group is something where we can put all the VMs that needs to be replicated or protected. Okay, so we can create a protection group like this on the screen all itself. So there is an option here to add a protection group. I have to give a name from. So from is basically which location to what location you are looking for the replication. So from will be the site, the Hyper-V site I have created previously, and target will be Azure. So from my site to Azure, I want this replication to happen. So I need to select the name here of my protection group, provide from location, source location, destination location, and the account. So account will be associated with my protection group, and this account, a storage account, will be used for putting all the replicated data in. Okay, once I have created a protection group, it will be seen like this. So if we go inside this protection group and see what is there, a machine is already protected here. So the last step for doing it is we need to add a VM which we need to protect. So I can see this VM. How is this VM? I'm seeing this VM as, if you see my server, this server has a Hyper-V host running, physical server, and this server has got two virtual machines running on it. One is ASR VM and one is BCDR VM. Okay, ASR VM is already protected with my vault in the site. BCDR is still not protected. Okay, so this VM I am able to see in my portal because I have registered my physical server, this physical server, with the vault. So let's go back and see. This is the ASR VM which I have already protected. Now click on add VMs, and once we'll click, we need to add this VM. This is the place where we will mention that I need to protect this virtual machine, so which means this VM will be replicating to my vault. We need to select the operating system, what operating system this VM is having, whether it's a Windows virtual machine or a Linux based VM, and subscription and the account. Why I'm able to see these three accounts here is because I have these three accounts in the same region. So as I said, if I will have 10 accounts, storage accounts in the same region as that of my vault, I can see all those in this list. So I can select any of those regions for the replication. So I will be selecting this one and I will click on OK. So once I have clicked on OK, it has started doing the protection for my VM. So this is a process which can take some time, because the first time the VM is getting replicated, it is fetching all the information from the host machine, from the VM, the state of a VM and everything. And once everything is fetched in, it gets protected here. And after getting protected, the VM will look like this. I have this VM already protected. And if you see, the properties of my VM, on-premise properties are like this. This VM has Windows. The name is ASR VM. Server, the site which is associated with this VM is Hyper-V test site. And this is the GUID associated with my VM. And on the Azure, where it is protected now, we can see it has Windows. Disk properties match on-premise. So it has the same disk properties as it is having on-premise. So nothing is changed. Now it's running on Azure. It's protected on Azure, so I can see server as Microsoft Azure. And the storage account associated with this VM, which is replicated, is Hyper-V ASR Azure. Okay. I haven't done any failover for this VM yet, so that's why I cannot see any last failover information. But once we will do a test failover, it will create a job. And that job will run for some time. And after that job is run, I can see that the last failover has occurred this date, this time. So for the second VM, which I just protected, if you see, it has started doing the protection. So if you want to see what is happening there, we can click on this, or we can go to the job. So this is what it does when the protection starts. It checks for the prerequisites, identify the replication target, enable replication, and then update the provider states. Okay. So after doing this, we can quickly go back here to the protected items and see my VM. And there are options of test failover. So we can have a test failover in case we are just testing out the things in ASR. So we can test failover. So in case of test failover, it's the manual failover and no data is lost in that condition. Everything will remain intact. It's just the failover, testing failover, that whether the things are working fine or not. So once you click on test failover for the VM protected, it will ask you for confirming and it will ask you which network you want to use. Because on Azure, you have created a network associated with the site. So you can select a network, click on OK, and it will start a test failover for that VM. Okay, and once the VM is failed over, we will be able to see the VM under the virtual machines running in the portal, in the Azure portal. Also, the good thing about creating this type of setup is we can create a recovery plan as well. So if there are some applications or some virtual machines which are running some kind of applications and they want those applications to start one by one, there's a DB, a tiered application, tiered setup, we can create a replication plan and let the VM know that this VM has to be started first, after this the second one and third one. So DB should be the first one to be started, then web server, and the last one should be the app server. So we can create a plan like that as well. So these are a few things which we can do, and these are the quick overview how we can work with Hyper-V to Azure. And once the failover is completed. So I do have a VM whose failover is completed. So I can show you in my VMs. This is the VM I'm talking about, this test VM. So if you see, the status is planned failover committed. Okay. So this VM has a failover already committed. It's already running on my portal, Azure. So I can see this VM in the virtual machines under my portal. So this is the VM that I was talking about. So if you go to this VM and we see dashboard. So this is my VM that is running on my Azure after the failover was done. Same is the case for failback. We have to just reverse the failover process. And once the reverse failover is done, the VM will start running back on the primary region, which is your on-premise region. So that's something which would have given you some some sort of information on how the things needs to be set it up. Same is the case with VMM to Azure or with VMware to Azure, which we will be talking in the next section, which Tom will be discussing about. So how it's done. Few things are added in VMware to Azure, but mostly the things work like this only. So this is all from my side. Over to you, Tom.
Thank you very much for that overview, Pamela. We appreciate you doing this. We should highlight the fact that you're working at midnight at this point, India Standard Time. So big thank you for helping us with today's presentation.
Sure.
Fantastic. Okay, so guys, hopefully you got a bit of a flavor for what ASR looks like. And I just wanted to kind of briefly review the technologies. By the way, lots of great questions coming in through a QA manager. We're moderating those, so do check those out. But here's the basic picture that we basically showed you in this demonstration. We got our Hyper-V VMs. Those VMs are replicated using Hyper-V replica technology baked into the actual Hyper-V host themselves. And that is where the replication occurs from into Azure. The other, so basically you deploy agents to these and that's what really gives you ability to fail those into the cloud. VMware story, which I would assume a lot of you guys are still probably have, you know, large VMware environments. The process is a little bit different. So this is really where the InMaj acquisition came in. We acquired this company about, year and a half ago now. But the company's been around for 13, 14 years. I've worked with them. They provided, you know, basically a DR solution for any type of a machine. And they have a very interesting architecture and topology. And what they're doing is that they're placing this mobility agent into each of the VMs that you want to protect. And in fact, you could install it on a bare metal, as you can see right here. And that allows you to then replicate that data into the cloud. So we really don't care what it is. Someone else was asking if you could protect Hyper-V 2008 R2 that does not have Hyper-V replica functionality, but you could potentially use this solution to protect those VMs, although I would recommend that you move to Server 2012 because it is a bit cleaner architecture. But it is something that's been in the marketplace for a while. My understanding is I don't really have any details around pricing, but we saved a tremendous amount for our customers when we took that over, and now that is an offering that's available with Azure backend. So just real quickly, the way that works, because I know that it might be difficult to kind of understand the details of this Hyper-V replica, you know, and how SRM and VMware works, everybody knows. But basically, the mobility agent is a in-machine agent running on the physical box or on the VM that monitors all the block changes. It sends all those changes to the local process server, and the process server then sends up that information into Azure, where the master target server receives that information and starts rating data to the disk. Config server in this equation is basically storing all the parameters for configuration of these VMs. And that information, you know, pretty much flows at the beginning. I will also mention, because the question did come through, that you do have ability to run that over express route, because it's really an endpoint. So if I actually point to my config server through the private IP through my express route, now I'm actually able to take this whole traffic and have it secured and running, you know, basically end-to-end guaranteed service through your network provider. So hopefully that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, the way that we also evolving our offerings too, this is something that, you know, we've been working with NetApp for a while. We do have options to actually bring in actual arrays into it. And this is another opportunity to really kind of look at what kinds of solution would work best for me, right? Because the reality is that, you know, different environments, different levels of tolerance for risk will really yield different solutions at different price points, as I've mentioned at the beginning of our conversation here. So with that, this is a couple of reference points for you guys here. The first one kind of covers the whole Azure Site Recovery more broadly. The second link actually takes you through the step-by-step process for how to light up the Azure Site Recovery from VMware hosts. And so I really encourage you to take a look at that. In fact, if you go to the portal, this is one of the links when you select that scenario that it takes you to. It's provided here for your convenience. I've also here, you have a link to check out any future sessions for MTC Studios. With that, let's see if we got any additional questions in the Q&A manager. Let's see, so let me read some of these questions, see if I can answer them. We do have a little bit of time. So you can. So the question is coming about how the addressing changes. So you can fail over to the same IP addressing range. You can recreate the VNet in Azure that has the same IPs as you do have on-prem. But if you know anything about networking, that obviously is probably not going to be the optimal topology for you, because if you have two things or two address spaces in different places, probably you're going to see some very unpredictable behavior. But you can figure out how to do this particular failover. And in this case, VPN does not really come into play. I suppose you could try to replicate the data into VPN via VPN for additional security, but that's already applied in the product itself. Server 2012 included Hyper-V replica. R2 brought in a much smaller incremental replication cycle. I believe we only provided 5 and 15 minute failover in 2012. R2 brought that down to 30 seconds, 5 minutes, and 15 minutes. And so I think that's sort of the biggest bump that you get when you move. And the mobility server can absolutely be installed on Linux. So when we acquired InMaj, you know, I quickly adopted the tools, and I actually installed all the old tools to get it working as we were creating this much better experience. And Linux was one of the big things that we needed to make sure. And in fact, we do support several flavors of it. All the mainstream support is there. Let's see. Can you send us links to, yes, so the links to the presentation already contained in there. And sorry. I'm sorry.
Post it on demand.
Okay, we'll post it on demand with a session. I apologize, a little audio issues here. So I think with that, unless we got any other questions, I think it's a wrap. Thank you, everyone.